All right, today we have Lindsay who will be sharing on step seven. Take it away, Lindsay.
Awesome. Thank you. This is a great meeting. It's like it's a little women's meeting. I looks like I can't tell. But anyway, regardless, I'm excited to be here and excited to be invited to the UK, even though I am a backup. My sister's sobriety, Kylie, who I brought through the steps, was going to speak, but I think she had a work thing. So I'm not working right now. I have plenty of time, and I'm getting to go to a lot more meetings, which is really good because I've been in a place in my life for a couple years now where I haven't been able to get to meetings on a regular basis. And I don't feel as connected to the fellowship as I want to be. And I just finished my residency. So in America, you go to medical school and then you have to do a residency, which mine was 3 years. And then I just finished that and pr finished my boards. And so I'm about to start my job, which is going to be amazing because it's going to be like a consistent job. Oh, that's my husband and my baby. I was going to say a warning. They'll probably be in here in a minute. Just so she's going to go down for a nap. But anyway, so life is about to get a little bit more consistent, although very chaotic, which is just the way it is. But it's just been really nice to have this break because I've been able to come to more meetings, I've been able to speak more and just start to feel more like myself in my recovery. But that being said, I'm really excited that this is like a small meeting because I'm certainly not an expert on step seven. And I don't know, I don't really know who is. I mean, I've heard some really great talks on it, but it's still I don't want to say it's confusing or elusive. I just don't. I think it's different for everybody. You know, I think that it's when you guys talked at the beginning of the meeting, and this is something I've heard in BBA a lot, is like it's an experience. You know, and when I would get to go to the meetings down in San Diego because I got sober down there, and got to go to the Monday and the Wednesday night meetings, and kind of when it was in its heyday, and it was really awesome. There were some wonderful people down there and some really great speakers. And you would listen to these people and you just be like, oh my God, like I just want to know everything that they know and like and just be able to sound that great and do all, you know. And then but and they would say something like, but don't take my word for it, or don't just try to, you know, you go have your own experience with this, because that is way more powerful than anything that anybody's going to say from a podium or on a little, you know, little square. It doesn't it's all about the experience and what it means to you. And I think that that is the essence of step six and seven. There are some stuff in there's definitely, especially in step one, I think that there's some intellectual, academic, like book knowledge that we need to understand as a baseline, as a foundation of like, what is this disease that we're talking about? Because if we don't have that clear, then none of it makes any sense. But so that is pretty specific. And then, you know, the fourth step has some very specific directions, and the fifth step does. Eight and nine, you know, it's a little bit more flexible, but in general, it's pretty much the same thing. And same with 10, 11, and 12, but six and seven, three, two, even, you know, they're all really about your own personal experience. And so that's what I'm going to share about. So I was just reading at the beginning of the meeting because I'm like, what can I just like look at real quick to kind of remind myself of some good, like, basic talking points really about it. And there is a transcript from Dan Sherman. I don't know if you have I've been able to read that, but it's posted on the BBA website. It's from a talk that he gave, and then they wrote it in a transcript. And that's really the most explanation, other than listening to some talks with Tyla or Pat T and stuff like that. Those people are all really great as well, or any of the workshops when you go through step six and seven. But as far as the like the mechanics of six and seven, for me, it's always been following a fifth step. You know, that I was taught that, you know, I write my fourth step, I go share my fifth step. When I'm done with my fifth step, I take my hour out. And I do this, you know, I did this like with my big fourth step, like the first one, and then all the little mini sort of fourth steps I've done after that, like when I have, you know, a set of inventory that I want to write. Anytime I write inventory, I bring it to step six and seven. I don't do six and seven outside of that process, to be quite honest with you, but that like a formal like doing step six and seven. But I think the nature of step six and seven is something that's in the 12 and 12, I love it. Says that this is a step that separates the men from the boys. I think it's in step six that that's when it starts it. And I think that that essence of step six and seven has to be a working part of my recovery. Otherwise, I think I'm missing the boat on what this whole thing is about. And so anyway, to go back to when I do the actual like formal step six and seven, I review the questions that I discussed with my step partner in step five of, do you see that on your own power you couldn't have done any differently? I can't think of the other three questions off the top of my head because I'm just nervous, but is there anything I'm still clinging to? And what's the third one? Anyone can put it in the chat if because I'm just not remembering it real quick. But I review those questions. I think the most important of those questions for me is, can I see on my own power I couldn't have done it any differently? Oh, what do I find objectionable? Duh. thank you. So and that is very important, right? Because it's to me, what is objectionable always comes back to that I don't think that God is big enough to handle whatever fear is driving whatever behavior and whatever resentment and all these different things. But I come down to me, something that's objectionable is essentially it's untrue. I'm objecting to that because it's false. It's a false claim. It's not true. It's not objectionable. Like it is, and it leads into behavior that I don't like in my life, but really underneath it, there's something that is not true, that I'm a delusion that I'm basing my whole life on, and that is objectionable. And so, and it always is that, God isn't big enough to handle this. That it's really pretty simple that it always gets down to that. And so, I find it objectionable when I'm making God too small, when I'm making, God, incapable of certain things or only categorized into certain areas, yeah, just not big enough. And I just need more God. I'm not letting God in enough in some certain area of my life. And so I review that. And I review, though, that I can't do it any differently on my own power. That, of course, when on my own power, I go into fear. And then fear leads to delusions, which then leads to selfish thinking and selfish actions. And so it's not that I'm bad or gross, or defective or anything like that. It's just that I'm scared. And as a human, that's how we are. That's just the human condition. And then the solution is more God. It's not to beat myself up over, having all these behaviors that I find objectionable. And so, oh, hi, Ben. Can you please give mommy a little break? Thank you. And so when I review all that, that posture gets me ready to do step six and seven. And that question of clinging, I've never been clinging to anything. And I've never worked with anybody who's ever been clinging to anything. To me, clinging means that I am completely unwilling to give it to God. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be hard. I might not want to do it, but it means that it's going to be difficult. And, or I mean that I'm completely unwilling to do it. And if I really believe what I know to, if I really had a true first step experience, I shouldn't be clinging to anything. I'm going to hold on just 1 minute and remove Ben. Hold on. I'm so sorry. He loves to come on and see everybody's faces. And he like knows that mommy doesn't drink, but I don't, he really doesn't have a clue. He wants to come and see everybody. but Justin, I think he just escaped from my husband. So I was talking about step six and seven that went, oh, clinging. And so, yeah, I had one person that I worked with and they were still clinging to a resentment that they had with their parents. And I mean, I was like, well, I don't really know what to tell you because to me, if you're still clinging, it's because you think you have some kind of power. And then, I don't know if you can continue on with the steps. And I don't know what that experience looks like. I mean, I would be a little bit more gentle about it today, but and allow someone to have their own experience. But it really does mean to me that it's a first step problem if someone's still clinging. So when I explain it like that to people, like this means if you're clinging, it means you're 100% like not going to give it over to God. I've never had anybody say, yes, I'm clinging. You can be 99% like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to give it to God. It's going to be uncomfortable. I don't like it, blah, blah, blah. But if you still have that 1% of willingness, then I say you're not clinging and you can move on. And so that's been my experience with everything. And so that to me is step six of humbly asking God to remove all the defects of character. And then step seven, or became willing to, and then step seven, humbly asking God to remove all these defects of character, is simply just is the prayer, you know. And I do the meditation where I build the arch, right? And I look over, are the stones properly in place? Have I mixed the cement, the mortar without sand, all those different things? And I conceptually, I've done it where I have actually done it as step six and seven next to a physical arch. And then I got up and I walked through it, or I can just sort of imagine that there's an arch and walk through it. But the whole point is that there is an arch and that I walk through it and I get to have that experience of being closer to God. And that gives me more freedom, because this program to me, if I had to just use one word to explain, what this program is all about, to me, it's freedom. How free do you want to be? How free do I want to be? I want to be really, really free. And so with that is like the formal mechanics of what I do for step six and seven. And then of course, to me, a true six and seven means that I then is very quickly followed by an eight and nine. You know, like you can't just do, to me, I don't think it would make sense to be, oh yeah, I totally did six and seven, but I'm not like getting busy with making my amends. Because a real six and seven means I want more God in my life. Like I've seen all this stuff in steps three and four and five of, and even all the way back to one of just that of just evidence and experience of why I need to have a closer relationship with God, a bigger conception of God, less blockage from God. And to do that, I need to be able to go out and clean up the wreckage of my past, whether it be from when I was in my active behaviors, because I know there's other addictions here. But for me, drinking, like whether it's back from my drinking or whether it's, you know, stuff that I'm doing right now in my sobriety, you know, it doesn't really matter. But if I'm unwilling to make those amends, then am I really wanting more God in my life? Or am I just saying that I want more God in my life? And I think that's why step six and seven is right there, because eight and nine, it's a lot to ask. You know, I've had to make some really difficult amends where I don't want to do them for a variety of reasons, but it comes down to fear. But then right before that, I have to go, but I just said that I wanted more God in my life. And then here I am getting a way to do that. And I don't want to balk at that, you know, because my experience is every single time I've done my amends, I get more God, because step six and seven is very powerful, but it's still not going to have like a lasting effect unless it's followed by the rest of the steps, because it's still in the middle. It's not like you're done. It kind of sounds like sometimes, you know, like if you think about, okay, like I'm all willing to give everything to God, I do it, great. Like, shouldn't you be done at that point? And it's like, no, the point for me is that at that point in the middle, I need more power, because I'm about to go do a lot of stuff that requires a deeper, more effective relationship with God, starting with amends, which is very terrifying. Then, you know, continuing to take personal inventory and go through my life, trying this newfound consciousness, doing a step 11, and then carrying this message to others. All of those things require a lot of extra power. And so this is where I'm getting that power. Earl Hightower, I don't agree with everything that he talks about, but if you ever have a chance to listen to him, he's hysterical. So he's worth listening to, because I think he is funny and he has some good stuff. But he talks about, you know, this is the first time they're going to let us out of the house. Like steps one, two, and three, four and five, like four, you're just writing by yourself in your room. Five, it's just you and somebody else talking. Six and seven is you and God. Well, eight and nine is like when we're going to actually go out into the world. And so this is when we're going to be representation of Alcoholics Anonymous, a representation of God. And so we need more power to do that, because that's a lot. That's, you know, I can't do that on my own. And I think that that brings me into kind of talking about, well, so what's the essence of step six and seven that really like is, I think it needs to be really, I was going to say ingrained in me, but more of it has to become a working part of my nature if I really want to stay sober and I want to stay spiritually fit, like comfortably sober. You know what I mean? Like not like I don't want to be living like I need to drink dry. I want to be comfortably sober, and that means adopting this principle of step six and seven into my life. And that's the principle of like God. I was gonna say God is everything or God is nothing. I know that's a step two thing, but this is where it really like becomes part of me. And I think that if I'm really gonna have a true spiritual experience, like they talk about in the Spiritual Awakening and throughout the whole book, but the idea that like all of my guiding thoughts, beliefs, and actions are going to completely change, and they're going to be reorganized, and they're going to be a completely new set of all of these things. It needs to be based in this step six and seven of being willing to give everything to God and being willing to just having that humble posture of wanting more God in my life. And that
Five
to me, I
minutes.
think. Thank you. See, I knew I had no idea how long I had been talking. That to me is so easy to balk at and easy to miss. I think that is sort of where some people, miss that, and then they're, multiple decades of sobriety and they're miserable because they think that sobriety is just about not drinking. And this is where you realize, oh my God, this is not about not drinking. I mean, it is about not drinking. I had a whole talk about that last night that sobriety isn't just about not drinking, but it's still about not drinking, which is very, very true. And I don't want to take that back because I think at the end, if I start going backwards on step six and seven, the ultimate end of that for me is a drink. Because what I've been taught in step one, and I know to be true, is that the realization is that I will drink again. Not that I can't drink again, or that oh my God, I'm powerless. I can never do that again. It's that, oh my God, I'm powerless and I will do this if I don't have a spiritual experience. And so step six and seven is like, okay, well, yes, you're willing to let God come in and take that behavior or whatever it is from step one, but you need to be able to let God come into every single area of your life slowly, but eventually. And I think what happens a lot for people, and this happens because at least it happens for me. I don't know if, and I hear it when I talk to other women and everything like that in sponsorship. And so I think it's universally true, but that, in my two-way prayer, I hear God, I have direction from God, and then I ignore it. And that to me is not following step six and seven, because there's an invitation from God to do something. And I'm like, no, thanks, God. Can we do something else? You know what I mean? But God wants all of me, good and bad. That's what it's talking about in the prayer, and so there's always a constant invitation for something to go deeper. And I don't think that, and God hasn't, at least in my life, given it to me all at one time. You know what I mean? Because in step six and seven, sometimes it feels like that. It's like, okay, well, like poof, all my defects of character are gone. I'm giving God everything. I should be as white as snow. And it's been very, very, very slow of like God whispers in my ear and says, Lindsay, I think you should. You're using food like you use alcohol. I need you to let me into your area, this area of your life. I need you to let me into the area of money. I need you to let me into the area of parenting. I need you to let me into the area of your career and your this is not from AA, but it's from another spiritual teacher that I listen to. He's like, if you're having a hard time hearing God, just do the last thing that he asked you to do and wait, because that's what happens to me. I hear God and God's like, hey, maybe you should try this, or I think this is where you need to let me in. I get it. And then I'm like, no, God, I don't want to do that. And that's me not doing step six and seven, right? And then it's like radio silence for a little while. And it's not that God doesn't love me and doesn't want to be a part of my life or anything, but I just reversed that decision in step six and seven. And I'm like, nope, okay, I'm not going to do it my own way. And God's like, well, then I can't, you're blocking me. You're not letting me in. You're not giving me the good and the bad. I can't. And then it's just, again, it's like sort of stagnation, just radio silence. The good thing that I do know about six and seven, it is all encompassing. It is what it says it is. It's wanting everything and going to like, this is your new foundation for your life is God. That is it. This it's very simple. But it's not all at one time. It's like it's very slow. And again, it's sort of a whisper invitation in different areas of my life of Lindsay, I want more of you here. I want you to be more free. Because that's really what God is asking me to do. Again, another spiritual teacher that I heard, and I think this is brilliant, is in any area of my life that I feel, I think he says feel like stuck, but maybe a different word, but it's because I believed a lie. And in any area that I am free, it's because I believe a truth. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not painful, but truth can be very painful. But at the end of it, it's always freedom for me. And so in all of those areas, it's like God is asking me, it's an invitation to become more free. And it sound, but it's always to me in my humanity, in my fear, in my self-reliance, it sounds like, what? You want me to do, you want more of me? Like you want me to be more obedient, more disciplined, more whatever, like goody two shoes in this area. Like, I'm not gonna have any fun. Like, I'm gonna be stupid, boring, and glum. I'm not gonna do anything exciting or anything, you know, I'm not gonna get any relief. But God is like, no, oh, my child, like, it's the opposite. Like, and of course, I don't think God it gets mad at me or anything like that. I think he just is like, of course, he knows me so well because he made me. And it's like, yes, Lindsay, I know you feel like that, but don't you know, haven't you had this experience in multiple areas of your life that every time you give me more, you get more? Like every time you, what it's, you sacrifice more, you are willing to do something more in this area of your life that you stand to get an even greater freedom on the other side. And that's the only thing that keeps me doing step six and seven in all these areas of my life is because I've had that experience. It talks about that in the 12 and 12 of like, we think, well, God's not going to take all these other defects of character away from me. God can't do, but you know, like, and it's like, but we all have a really great example because whatever brought us, oh, we're done. Okay, I'll end with this. Whatever brought us to our powerlessness in step one, God did relieve that. So if he can do that, can he give me more freedom in every single area of my life? That's all I have. Thank you.